Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now, put that hard-won wisdom to work as a modern elder. Chip Conley was in his mid-50s when he entered the imaginative and disruptive culture of Airbnb. He was older than the CEO, older than many of the people he worked with every day. The experience, both challenging and fulfilling, was the catalyst for Mr. Conley's evolution as a modern elder. He writes in his new book, "What if there was a new modern archetype of elderhood, one that was worn as a badge of honor, not cloaked in shame?" As Chip Conley joins us, I have a question for you. Imagine yourself at 100 years old. Would these midlife years seem filled with a sense of discovery and creativity? Or are you battling a feeling of irrelevance? And I chose 100 years old because these are midlife years. They can be fulfilling. They can be creative. They can be imaginative. But imagine yourself at the end of your working life and the end of your life and look back. What would you want this midlife period to be like when it comes to work? Okay, think about it and join in. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Chip Conley is the founder of Joie de Vivre Hotels and a strategic advisor to Airbnb. His new book about this is called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. And he joins us today from L.A. And Chip, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Carrie, thank you. It's great to be with you.
You write about the mythologizing that we do about these young tech entrepreneurs with their hoodies and their youthful worldview. And on the first day that you showed up at the Airbnb campus, I wondered if people were looking around at you and going, "What's the old dude doing here on campus?" And whether you were aware of that.
Well, it was quite a shock because I didn't realize. I'd spoken with Brian Chesky, who was the co-founder and is the co-founder and CEO of Airbnb. I knew he was 21 years younger than me, and he wanted me to be the head of global hospitality and strategy and his in-house mentor. But I hadn't fathomed the fact that I was twice the age of the average employee in the company. And so I'd never worked in a tech company before. So I was this hotelier who was coming into a tech company, and they were talking a language I felt like I was in a foreign land, and it was I just had to become like a modern day Margaret Mead.
and
imagine, what am I going to learn?
Yes. Right. You had advice from friends who said things to you like, "You'll be the adult in the room," and you didn't like that. And I think for all the right reasons. What is that indicative of, the way we think about this youthful culture?
Well, let me take a step back and say this is true, I think, across the generations. We almost operate like isolationist countries who share a border but don't share respect and trust for each other. So a lot of people my generation, baby boomers, thought these millennials are entitled and brats and they're not going to listen to you and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think in some ways there's a bit of envy because these young people have – the power has moved to the young like never before in the business or organizational world, partly because of our growing reliance on DQ, digital intelligence. But the thing that's – the reason I think there's a need for a modern elder is not to have an adult in the room, but it's to recognize that these young digital leaders cannot sort of miraculously embody – the relationship wisdoms and leadership skills that those of us who have been around for a few decades can offer. So it's like a partnership. And for me, it was absolutely a mutual mentorship because they taught me as much as I taught them.
So as I set up this show, I immediately got a tweet from Mallory. And this is really a good observation. Define elder. Do you only mean an age or experience? And she says, "I've got more experience at my job than my coworkers in the same position, but they're older than me." We're not only talking about age here, right, Chip?
Right, right. And I think elder is both a relative term, so it has a lot to do with who you're surrounded by. You could be an elder at 40 if you're surrounded by 25-year-olds, but also does speak to the idea that elder really speaks to wisdom and the idea that you have developed some experience, knowledge, and judgment based upon, you know, your tenure in what you're doing. Now, the question, you know, I want to be really clear about one thing. I'm not talking about let's go back to the era of reverence for our elders. I mean, that Good. Era doesn't exist in the United States much anymore. And frankly, the rest of the world's sort of going on the same path. So the modern elder is not about reverence. It's about relevance. And in order to be relevant as a modern elder, it means you need to be as much of an intern as a mentor. You need to be a lifelong learner and be curious and passionately engaged in learning. And that was what I had to do. I had never worked in a tech company before, so I was the dumbest person in the room whenever we were talking about technology. But I was open to being the intern publicly and learning, you know, in front of my younger compatriots. But also be the mentor privately. And over the course of my almost 6 years at Airbnb, I've mentored over 100 people in the company, and including the CEO. And so that's helped me to, you know, understand millennials a lot better than I did 6 years ago. But the number one thing I think that's true for the future is we have five generations in the workplace for the first time. If we don't learn how to create a trade agreement across generations, where we all bring what we know best to the table, there's a real lost opportunity here.
Yeah, I want to reach out to listeners here to say, because when we talk about, you know, mid-career changes or mid-career life, I hear from a lot of people who say, I am battling this perception that I'm irrelevant, that I can't learn, you know, even if you can, even if you have all the skills and the tools that you need to be this lifelong learner, I am perceived from the outside as being someone who is kind of stuck. So let me put the number yeah. out again. As you hear our conversation develop here with Chip Conley about what it means to be a modern elder, I'm talking to those of you who are battling a feeling of irrelevance in your mid-career life. You're seeing younger people come into the workplace. You're looking for work. And you feel like you're having a hard time getting past this idea that, well, we were looking for a 30-year-old, not a 55-year-old. What do you take from our conversation? What do you think of this idea of redefining what it means to be a modern elder? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, wherever you are in the region, and then on Twitter at CarrieMPR, to Tim in Hastings. Hi, Tim. How does this sound to you?
Well, it sounds very timely, and I'm glad you have such a young man on to talk about it.
That's right. So, yeah, what are you thinking about?
I'm 66, and in my everyday business, because I can't quite retire yet, I'm astounded at how much history that we would have grown up with that's relevant to today's events is not even thought of by not only the millennial generation, but even those older. And your screener, she goes, well, can you give me an example?
Yeah.
And I said, what is today in American history?
What?
She goes, I don't know. I don't know. I said, today, 155 years ago, was the Gettysburg Address. And at that time, we were embroiled in a great civil war. Mm. And Lincoln had gone out 4 months after Gettysburg, where the first Minnesota was terrifically involved in turning the tide.
Can we focus back on specifically about what we're talking about here, which is you saying knowing American history and not lecturing the people, I guess, in your environment, but having an awareness. Tim, is that fair to say?
Well, it's that it is lecturing, though, because people aren't even, they're not even on top of this.
I don't know, Tim. Hold that thought. Let Chip jump in. Good.
Yeah, I think the worst thing you can do as someone old in a place where you're older and everybody's younger is to lecture, because you come across as the parent or the priest. And there's a great old saying, knowledge speaks and wisdom listens. And there's a reason that the owl is perceived as the wisest animal in the forest, because it has the most attuned listening skill. So there's sometimes you need to bring history out and help people to understand it. But if you start with that, you'll sound like you're somebody at a pulpit and you're preaching.
I watched an interview with Brian Chesky, the founder of Airbnb, and I thought he had some really interesting things to say about what it meant to be a founder. And I wondered how you had helped shape his own self-image, his own self-awareness about what it means to be a founder, and the fact that when something succeeds, it looks so inevitable, right, in hindsight. But what it means to be in the midst of this. So here's Brian Chesky reflecting on that.
One of the other things that kept me going was I remember the worst days of Airbnb were better than my very best days at the job I had before that.
Right.
And I said, my worst day here is still better than the job I had before, because I'm doing what I love. And even if I'm failing at what I love, I'm doing it. And there's something incredibly powerful and special about just the pursuit. And so I think it's not rational to be a founder. You've got to love what you do, because it's just so painful.
So Chip, I imagined you saying to him all the things that he learned, like, you're going to have ups and downs. Keep it in perspective. Look at the arc of your career. What do you hear in that?
Well, first of all, I just got a big smile on my face just hearing his voice. You know, we've spent 6 years by each other's side. And for me, it was an interesting process of right-sizing my ego, because I had been CEO of my own company for 24 years and then joined Brian sort of in the background. We would meet in my backyard cottage almost every weekend during the first few years I was there. And it was partly to just get into the more of the personal side, the emotional intelligence side of leadership and business, and frankly, to be an ear for him. And many times an older person can be a mentor, but they can also be a confidant. And I used to think of the word confidant as meaning someone who just takes your confidences, like a receptacle for trusted information and keeping it secret. But one of my direct reports once told me, she's French, and said in French, confidant means the person who gives you confidence.
Oh,
and I think that part of what I did with Brian was I helped to give him confidence, but also humility as well. Because one of the things about these young tech leaders who have to go out and raise money from venture capitalists and have all that bravado is hubris is almost like what they lead with. And I think the process of moving from being a young person to a middle-aged or older person is going from hubris to humility. And so I think Brian was able to accelerate his emotional process by having someone by his side like me, and not just as sort of a coach who meets with him once a month or every other week, but literally someone 60 to 70 hours a week in the trenches with him, because I was running part of the company.
You know, I really relate to what you've just said, because I think some of what intimidates and repels some people about this young generation of entrepreneurs is a swagger. Right? I know it all. I've seen it all. I'm in my mid-20s. How in the hell would you know it all at that point, right? But this is how it's seen from the outside. So when I hear you saying, you know, talking him through a sense of humility, that is safe, right? You're starting a brand new company. There's a lot of risk. It is safe still to feel humble in that moment. I can feel you kind of supporting that.
Yes. Yeah, you know, the idea that you have to know it all at age 26 or something when you start a company, like, really? I'm more than twice your age, and I definitely don't know it all. I think the key thing with Brian was Brian had a point of view, which was, I'm here to learn. And so whatever he wanted to learn, he'd go out and try to find the person in the world who could teach him. And he learned to listen. And by listening and taking it in, he was able to take that wisdom from older people and accelerate his path of growth. And, you know, people have made the comparison of Travis at Uber and Brian at Airbnb, because they're the two largest sharing economy companies, and Brian still has his job and Travis doesn't. And I think it has a little bit to do with the fact that Brian was in that learning mode and had enough of a willingness to bring in people who could teach him, whereas Travis came across purely with his bravado and at times just, you know, insane kind of leadership skills that didn't really translate into anything effective for the company. Although he's a brilliant guy, so I don't want to beat Travis up just in terms of his intelligence, but in terms of his leadership skills, you know, someone needed to microwave his emotional intelligence.
Chip Conley is with us, and we're talking about his new book, Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. Now, this comes out of the experience that Chip had. He is an entrepreneur and the founder of Joie de Vivre hotel chain. Airbnb asked if Brian Chesky, the founder, asked if he would come in and work alongside him. And this was the catalyst for Chip to start thinking about this reimagining what it means to be a modern elder. And I'm tapping into how you feel about that. I mean, when I mentioned it to my friend Kathy Werzer about 30 minutes ago, elder, I don't like that name. I don't like that word. Well, Chip is speaking right to that. And I want to hear from you about how you define modern eldership. And I raised this question at the beginning. If you were looking back at the whole arc of your life, you know, you're 100, you're looking back to these mid-career years, would you want them to be as imaginative and creative as they can be? Are you experiencing that? How do you get to that? 651-227-6000 on Twitter at @CarrieMPR, where I love this. Sue says, I stumbled into my current career at the age of 50. I'm old enough to be everyone's mother and many of my coworkers' grandmother. I've been here for 18 years because I'm good at what I do. What's happening there, Chip, in that work mm-hmm. situation that Sue's got going?
Well, you'd said something earlier, Carrie, about the fact, how do you get a job in your mid-50s or something like that when, you know, people won't talk to you because of your age. You know, I was talking to one of the best-known executive recruiters in the world recently, and she said, listen, the thing to do if you're middle-aged is to show up with the following: curiosity and passionate engagement. She said if you have those two things, people will notice your energy and not your wrinkles. And that's assuming you can get a job interview. That's the hard part, is, you know, having people apply ageism to you, which means you might not get the job. But the bottom line is, I think anybody who's passionately engaged in what they're doing and has that curiosity for learning, is they create the space where they actually feel a little bit timeless, and it's harder to determine their age. And I think, you know, that's the future, is how do we help people at all ages? If we're going to live to 100, you're probably going to work till you're 75 or 80.
Wow.
And so many of us are going to do that, partly some by choice, some by necessity. And what it's led to is this era of life called midlife, which in 1965 was coined as a crisis. 53 years later, midlife is now not just a crisis, 45 to 65, but I think it's a marathon, because I think it starts about age 35, especially in the tech world, and it goes to about age 75. Oh, so wow. What was a crisis is now a marathon, and we've created an intensely long irrelevancy gap for those who actually feel they're no longer wanted in the workplace. So I can talk a little bit more about that, but I'll let you.
Yeah, I want to share a little bit of the wisdom that you wrote about that in the book, and then we'll go back to the calls. You say when you're talking about ageism, yes, obstacles can grow as we age, but so can our ability to weather the storm. When you've worn out your roles, cast aside all your costumes, and relinquished your customs, you're left with yourself in its purest form. Just say something about that, Chip, and then they'll go to calls.
Well, you know, our physical peak is probably in our 20s. Our financial peak for many of us in terms of our salaries is around age 50. In the tech world, it's 45. But our emotional peak, when we have actually developed the pattern recognition of understanding ourselves and others, is in our 50s and beyond. And in fact, based upon the U-curve of happiness, people are happier in their 70s, then their 60s, then their 50s, then their 40s. You actually start to see a happiness curve go up. So what does that mean? It means, frankly, that there's the opportunity to show up with your humanity. And in an era that is increasingly focused on the digital, I think the differentiator more and more in the workplace is who has that emotional intelligence to be collaborative and to help teams and people do well. And older people provide that kind of invisible productivity to the workplace because they help the people, not just themselves, but the people around them, do better.
Call here from Burke in Red Wing. Burke, thank you so much for waiting. Really, really glad you did.
Thanks. I so appreciate this conversation. I feel very relevant at 70 because I went back to college in a mid-career program at 50.
Excellent.
Walked away from a 25-year reputation. And when you strip away the reliance on a reputation and you just simply have to begin to be who you are, in a room full of students that are 19 to 22, it's astonishing. And I realized pretty quickly I was not there to parent everybody in the room. I didn't have to have all the answers. It was really up to me to listen and learn with the rest of them. And it was the best thing I could have done because now at 70, I work full time. I feel incredibly relevant. And over the last 20 years, I've led major projects in the United States and Mexico with millennials as my teammates. And there's just been great equanimity. And my role is really to empower them and their leadership and to work together to solve problems. And so I have to say, I love this conversation.
You're the poster. You are the poster girl for this conversation, Burke. I'm
Where
not kidding.
Were you when I was interviewing people? I would love to have talked with you, Burke.
I know.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
There's so much to comment on there. I'll just be brief, though. What I'll say is that what you heard her energy, right?
Yeah.
You heard the energy.
Right.
You heard that willingness to let the three-stage life go away. So for those of you who don't know it, the three-stage life is sort of what we've historically been saddled with. You learn till you're 20 or 25, you earn till you're 65, and then you retire till you die. And that model is evaporating. And the millennials don't believe in it. And for those of us who are older, we need to realize, yes, you're going to learn in your 50s or your 70s. You may take a sabbatical for a year if you can to go learn something new. You may go back to school as Burke did. And that process is challenging because we haven't necessarily created the social crucible for people in midlife to know that that's a fine path to take. So I have a lot more thoughts on that. And we created a modern elder academy, which is the world's first midlife wisdom school.
Really?
Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So as I was writing the book a year and a half ago, I was struck, having interviewed 150 people in midlife, I just felt all of the anxiety and bewilderment of this period of life. And I started to think about the fact that, you know, there are an enormous number of transitions that happen in midlife. You may get divorced. Your spouse may die. Your parents may die. You may change your job, your career. You may have empty nest syndrome. You might have menopause or the male version andropause. There's all kinds of things that happen in midlife. But we as a society have not addressed this very well. And in fact, this is why we call it a crisis as opposed to sort of an awakening. But if we look at the history of societies and communities, they have usually provided rites of passage or celebrations or rituals for people going through transitional times. Puberty, bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, quinceañera. You move from adolescence to adulthood. You have a commencement ceremony. You graduate. You get married and you have a wedding. You have a baby shower when you have a baby. When you die, you have a funeral. But between baby shower and funeral, nada, nothing. And so I wanted to create the world's first midlife wisdom school. And we created basically a social enterprise with a beachfront campus in Baja in Mexico, where people come down and they navigate their midlife transitions.
This is
and
great.
With a curriculum that helps people understand how to mine their mastery and their wisdom, but repurpose it in new ways out there for the second half of their life.
Boy, so how do you get a spot in that midlife academy on the beach?
Sure. It's over 50% of the people who are coming are on scholarship, either mm-hmm. full scholarship or 50% scholarship. It's a 1 week program from Sunday to Sunday. You go to modernelderacademy.org. So it's not a profitable venture. It's my way to give back to people 35 to 75 to help them to realize, wow, I'm 58 years old now. And the longevity sites online say that I'm going to live till I'm 98. Mm-hmm. If you do the math, If you start counting at age 18 when you really start having choice as an adult, I am basically halfway through my adult life. I'm at halftime at age 58. Most of us don't think that way. Most of us don't think that at age 58, you're halfway through your adult life. You think, oh, I'm sort of on the downside. Well, you know, when we help people to realize how much life they still have ahead of them, it helps them to reimagine the fact that last year I took up surfing for the first time and I'm now learning Spanish. And these are things that sometimes people in their 50s say, oh, I can't do that.
I've tried to learn Spanish three times, Chip, so I'm taking determination from you again. Here's Michael on Twitter who says, your guest just advised against elders, sounding like someone in a pulpit preaching as a pastor with 26 years experience. I wonder why he thinks that's a bad thing. He's kidding you. Angela Davis, who's about to take over the show at 11 a.m., is listening into this, and she says, hey, Carrie, you're speaking to my heart this morning as you talk about modern elders in the workplace. As Demi Lovato would say, what's wrong with being confident? And to the phones to Carrie, listening in Minneapolis. Hey, Carrie, hi.
Hi.
Hey, what'd you want to add to this?
I am just about to turn 60, and I am in the fortunate position of being the boss. I run a small nonprofit organization. All of my staff are 15 to 25 years younger than I am. Mm-hmm. And one of the advantages I feel like I have is that I do get to be the boss and I do mentor them a lot. But one of the other pieces that I learned when I started hitting menopause was that I often acknowledge some of the things that I am compromised about because of my age. So I have a hearing loss. And so I bring that up, or I have a memory thing and I don't remember a piece of things. And I actually bring it up and make it positive is the right word, but I make it an acknowledged factor in our whole dynamic that I really do have, I'm still really good at being the boss. I still have this base of knowledge. I still have the ability to help guide and make them grow into being better leaders. But I also have these pieces that just are happening because I'm aging. And I've just found that if I acknowledge it and let them roll their eyes or encourage them to roll their eyes, when indeed it's worth having eyes rolled at, that it helps us navigate this dynamic and still get the best outcome for all of us.
Yeah, Chip. Boy, I hear it, yeah. And I think she's got it. What do you think about the open acknowledgement, like calling people out in a funny and gentle way? I know you're thinking this as you look at me, but...
Yeah, well, listen, by the fact that I joined the company, and the first day, actually it was the third day, I was in a group of engineers in a meeting, and they were talking about shipping a feature, and I had no idea what they were talking about. So I think the idea of acknowledging what you don't know or what's not working like it used to is perfectly fine, as long as you're matching it with what you do know and what you can offer. And I think that that's the humility that I think people appreciate, and the humanity that I think people, younger people, appreciate, that people are open to that. Here's one last thought. When it comes to our brains, it is absolutely true that as we get older, our recall and our memory, so memory and quickness when it comes to our brain capacity isn't what it used to be. But there are other features that actually make our brain better. As we get older, get better at the left brain, right brain tango, and being able to actually move from left to right brain, which means we can get the gist of something holistically and we can synthesize ideas quickly. And so what tends to happen is if someone's hearing is going bad, their other senses start to actually step up. And so, yes, getting clear about what we're good at and what we're not good at, or what's working and what's not, is part of our path of being a true human and growing whole as opposed to just growing old.
You know, you used a word about 20 minutes ago that I want to come back to, which is the power of curiosity. Core ethic to the show that I do every day, I think it's something that really drives this idea of, I don't want to say reinvention, because if you hang on to that, you don't have to reinvent. You're just, right. you're open and receptive, right, to the way the world is changing. But you say that this is really an essential blend of curiosity and calm. If you find yourself in a workplace where you're seen as an elder and you want to, step into this idea of being a modern elder, why the combination there?
Well, curiosity, first of all, we can have it our whole lives, but in our teen years, we start to get weaned off of it a little bit. And then we get into our, adult years, and especially midlife adult, if you have kids, if you have 25 things you're dealing with, curiosity is not necessarily the most efficient way to be, because it means asking bigger questions. But I think the idea of curiosity as an elixir for creativity, innovation, and just, you know, being imagining possibilities is a life-opening way of being. And I think that's part of the reason why I think it's valuable. The calmness that you talk about is I do think one of the beauties of something that happens as we get older is we moderate our emotions a little bit. There's lots of evidence of this, and we get more emotionally intelligent on average. And what that means is, yes, we can be curious, but we can be curious in a way where we're calmly asking questions. It's not coming from a place of like being a pinball in a pinball machine, but there's a certain emotional moderation that helps the curiosity land in a more deep way. I really do believe that as we get older, presence and just being present mm-hmm. actually takes precedence over productivity.
Wow.
And the truth is they're both important. But productivity can also be, you know, running around like that pinball in a pinball machine, whereas presence means you're not absent. And unfortunately, one of the things that's true of younger people today, and all of us to some degree, is we get so attached to our smartphone that we're not ever really fully present. And that's something that I think an older person can bring to a room, especially one-on-one with someone, when someone feels like that this person's really listening to me, and not just to my story, but for my story, which means we can actually see the theme or thread that person can't see themselves.
Call here from Tom in Rogers. Hey, Tom. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Nice to be with you. You know, I spent a long time in IT work, and then that job disappeared, and I spent my last 10 years working at Target. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of people, I was their very first boss. They were, you know, high school juniors and seniors and college freshmen, and they'd never had a job before. And it was marvelous. It was so much fun. Some of the kids needed help discovering what work is versus hanging out with your friends. And and it's retail, but, you know, it is a surprisingly complicated job, and I could take the extra time to kind of show them how to do something one day, and then the next day saying, have you had a chance to do that? And if they hadn't, well, let's do another one. And taking extra time, the bosses and the managers in the store, you know, were very involved in their own careers. They wanted to be store managers, and I wasn't going to be a store manager, not for anything. But I did have time to spend some extra time with the kids, and it was just so much fun.
Tom, I really appreciate what you said about they were learning from me, but, you know, it was a mutual relationship there. I was learning from them. I want to go to a millennial, to Luke. Hey, Luke, really glad you called.
Hi, thanks for taking me.
Okay, so what are you thinking about here as you listen?
Well, I was thinking about how your guest was talking about curiosity, and really, for me, I look to my elders to sort of land my curiosity in reality and sort of help guide that sort of unbound, wild curiosity into mm-hmm. something that can really push me to succeed and where I want to go in my career.
And are you getting that kind of mentorship, Luke? Are you finding that?
Yeah, you know, good. I'm a student at the university, and so it's really nice to see my professors who are interested in the same kind of things as I am. And as I'm entering the workforce and gaining some more speed on my career, it's fun to see them get excited about me being interested in their career, too.
Hey, really good to have the call, Luke. Chip, this has been a wonderful conversation. And I wanted to close with a combination of modern elder and millennial. So it's Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga. How about that?
Love it.
Good to have you on the show. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
And most guys today, the woman cries today.
Oh, they're just silly gigolo.
And though I'm not a great romancer,
I know you're about to answer when we perform.
Anything goes.
Go.
Go.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KerriNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.